Welcome to the OU.org and www.etshalom.com. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom, and it's my pleasure to be studying this book of Shmuel Aleph, the first book of Samuel, with you. We are now at chapter 25 of the first book of Samuel, Shmuel Aleph. And this is a midpoint, both textually and evidently experientially, for David in his running from Shaul. And there is one parenthetic note here in Pasuk Aleph that may signal that things are about to change. Vayamot Shmuel, Shmuel died. Vayikavtzu chol Yisrael v'yispedulo v'yikvruhu b'veito barama. And all of Am Yisrael gathered and they mourned for him. The word mispeid, which in rabbinic Hebrew means to eulogize, in biblical Hebrew means to mourn. One example of that is in the third chapter of Kohelet. And they buried him in his home in Ramah. We'll talk about that in a moment. Vayakum David vayered al Midbar Paran. Now, David getting up and going down to Midbar Paran, which is not the same Midbar Paran as the one mentioned in the book of Bamidbar, and rather is a desert that is south of Har Chevron, does not indicate that David was necessarily at the funeral, but David evidently felt more alienated because his patron, if you will, Shmuel, who had anointed him, was no longer alive. The mention of the burial of Shmuel in his house in Ramah raises some considerations with regards to contemporary or conventional understanding. There is a hill near Mevaseret, just north and west of Yerushalayim, that has a Crusader-era fortress, which is commonly called Nabi Samuel, which literally means the prophet Shmuel, and is purported to be the burial place of Shmuel Hanavi, and there is a large parochet there near the purported tomb, which has the entire Tefillah of Chana there, and traditionally women who are barren go there and pray for children. It's a very moving place. However, it is very, very far from Ramah, even from Ramat Binyamin, and certainly from Ramat Ephraim, which is evidently where Shmuel is buried. Nonetheless, David now goes to Midbar Paran, and now we hear the story about a particular fellow and his wife who we have not met before. V'ish b'Ma'on. This man lived in Ma'on. Ma'on is a town on a hill south of Hebron. But his business was in Carmel. Carmel is a town right nearby on the next hill at Chirbet Carmel. Carmel, if you recall, was the place where Shaul was coming back to make a memorial or a commemorative stele for his victory against Amalek when Shmuel met him and effectively stripped him of the kingdom. Vayish gadol miot. This man was very big. Big here means important and obviously rich, as you will see. Velot son shloshet alafim ve'alaf chizim. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. Vayim b'gzozet sonoba Carmel. And he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now this takes us to something that a Jew of a few thousand years ago would have been very familiar with, but most Jews today are not aware of, and that is that the shearing of the sheep, which would take place somewhere at the beginning of the summer, was considered to be a very, very big occasion for ranchers. It was when they would reap the profits of all of the wool growing over the course of the winter and the spring, and it was known as Chag HaGez. Chag HaGez has recently been realized, a renaissance, and the first of the shearings go to the Kohen, Reshit HaGez. In any case, it's time for a great festivity. So this fellow, who has this big ranch and all of this holding, is having his Chag HaGez in Carmel. Hashem Ha'ish Naval. And by the way, the man's name is Naval. Now, the text will do this often. We saw it at the very beginning of our Sefer, and we talked about it in Shmuel Aleph. Perak Aleph, we also talked about it briefly in Perak Tet, where a person will be introduced, but we won't get his name for a little bit. And in this case, it seems that we have the same phenomenon that we have at the beginning of this book of Rut, where his name carries some meaning with it, and the text is giving us a sense of that meaning by saying, here's a man, and he's great, and by the way, his name is, and we pay close attention to his name, and what is his name? Naval, which means a disgusting one, and we will find out later how appropriate that name is. V'shem Ishto Avigail. Avigail is what we call a theophoric name, a name that is associated with God, Avi here being associated with God, and Gail being joy. So we have the Scrooge, if you will, the louse, and the joyous one. Vaisha tovat sechel v'yifat toar. The woman is bright and she is attractive. Vaish kashev v'ram ma'alalim. The man is hard and does bad things. V'hu chalibi. Now chalibi, some have translated as being he's like a dog, which is a very strange kind of appellation. But more than likely what it means is he is chalibi, meaning he's from the family of Kalev. Because if you recall from Sefer Yoshua, Kalev, and also from the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, Kalev, who was the messenger, the agent of the tribe of Judah, upon the entry into the land, Kalev conquered, was given the city of Hebron, and later surrendered it to the Kohanim, and therefore took some of the environs of Hebron. So it makes sense that here we have somebody who's a descendant of Kalev. That immediately raises this fellow's profile for us, because we understand, as I mentioned a couple chapters ago, that part of what David is doing in the area of Yehuda is to try to build up a constituency among his tribesmen, among the people of Yehuda. And as such, Naval, being a wealthy man, is a prime candidate for inclusion in David's lobby, if you will. We'll see why that does not play out, and nonetheless, why, in a sense, it does play out. Vayishma David b'Midbar, he goes, Eiz Naval Tzonot. David heard while he was in the desert that Naval was shearing the sheep. Now, there's a bit of background that the text does not give us, but that we must assume has taken place. We will find out about it a little bit more, but there's a whole piece that we're not given, and that is about the norms of Bedouin law that are still in practice in some places of the world, and were undoubtedly in practice here. And I'll clue you in as we get to the relevant verses. Vayishlach David asara ne'arim, vayomer David lo ne'arim, alu charmelo v'atem al Naval, shaltem lo b'shmi l'shalom. So David heard that Naval was having this big feast. He sent 10 of his boys, and he told them to go up to Carmel, and go to Naval, and greet him in my name. B'shalom. David is not coming on his own. He's sending messengers, which is more appropriate. It's more, the protocol is greater. V'amartem ko. And most people read it, V'amartem ko l'chai, but it's really V'amartem ko. This is what you should say. L'chai. Like l'chaim. V'yata shalom, v'itcha shalom, v'chol asher l'cha shalom. Beautiful greeting. You are in peace, your household's in peace, everything you have, all your possessions are in peace. V'ata, the rest of the messages, Shamati ki gozazim lach. He said, I heard that they are shearing your stuff. Ata haroim asher lecha yu imanu. You should know that your shepherds were with us. Lo hechlamnum, we did not shame them. V'lo nifkad lahem u'ma, and not one of their things was taken. Kol yimei otam b'Carmel, as long as they were in Carmel. In other words, David is notifying Naval that his men guarded the shepherds of Naval and made sure that all of his flock remained intact and returned intact, and so that's part of the profits that he's sharing. Sha'alan narechav yagidulach. He said, ask your boys and they'll tell you. Vimsu arim chen benach, and let my boys, these 10 that I've sent you, find favor in your eyes. Ki al yom tov banu. We've not come to fight. We've come for a celebration. Hinei tashertim sayadecha. Tonight, give whatever you have of your festival. You're having a big party. Give some of it to the boys and to me, your son. David acts with great humility here. You are the honored man. I am simply your servant who helped watch your flock. Give some of this stuff to David. Now, we listen to this, and to our unaccustomed ears, David's request seems, at the very least, chutzpahdik, and very nervy, and perhaps at the most, we could even argue that it's really an ethical request. Just because you decided on your own to help this guy out, if that's really true, that doesn't give you a piece of the profits. Until we look at Bedouin law and Bedouin custom, and we find that that indeed was the way that it was practiced, and it's still practiced today, that if there are people out there who watch the flock and help watch the flock, they are due some of the profits, and withholding the profits from them is considered to be a form of theft. That will play out a little bit later in the parak. So they came, they gave Naval this entire report. You can imagine these 10 boys coming to Naval in the middle of the party, and they spoke, and they waited for Naval's response. And so Naval responded to David's servants, and he said, "Me David." And this should remind us, "Umi ven Yishai." Who is this David, and who is this son of Yishai? In other words, why should I grant this fellow what he's asking? Hayom rabu avadim amit partzim ishim ne'adonav. Today there's lots of slaves who are being nervy to their masters. Now, who is he referring to? Prima facie, he's referring to David, that David has rebelled against Shaul. However, on another level, he may be referring to David's men. If you recall back in Perek Chaf Bet, when David assembled his first group of 400, we're told that the men who came to him were men who had creditors after them. And typically, in the ancient world, if a man had a creditor and couldn't pay, he would end up becoming a slave. So these men, by forming a posse and running away from home and joining David, in effect, were walking out on their masters. So his claim may not be just against David, it may be against David's entire troop. And he says as follows, V'lakachti... V'lakachti et lachmi v'et meimai v'et tivchati asher tavachti l'gozezai. Shall I take the bread and the water and the slaughter that I've slaughtered, the meat that I've slaughtered for my shearers, for my participants in my party, v'atatilan hashim asher ladati mizahem, shall I give it to people I don't even know where they're from? Do you want me to give this stuff to you guys? I don't even know who you are, and this is stuff I prepared for my celebrants. So his answer basically was a very, very nervy no. And so David's men went off on their way. They came back and told David all of this. Now we would expect, perhaps without the background that I gave you, but we would expect David to say, okay, we didn't get any gain there, let's go somewhere else and see what we can get. But David has a different perspective on this. And evidently David sees Naval as something as a, not exactly as a test, but as a crossroads for his own development and how he's going to be with his own men and how much is he going to stand on protocol. And evidently he decides to stand on protocol, and he says as follows, everybody put in your sword in your sheath. They belted on their swords. David also. He wasn't just commanding them. This time he's going to go. We see a division here that we will see later on, more pronouncedly in Perek Lamed. But David had 400 of his men go with him as the attack force, and another 200 stayed to watch the vessels. David is smart enough to know that just because we are posse and we are desperados doesn't mean that somebody won't come and try to attack us, and if we leave everything behind, then we're vulnerable. So he leaves a third of his men behind. And so that is David. Now, we have watched the camera of our text follow David, basically. We find out about Naval, but David hears about it. David sends his men. The men come back. They give the report. David now has his men belt up with their swords, and they're ready to go. And now the camera switches back to Naval's camp. V'Avigail Eshet Naval. Remember, we were told about Abigail. She's smart. She's attractive. The fact that she's smart will play a more critical role first. The fact she's attractive will play a critical role second. So one of the young men who evidently was there when Naval responded the way he did to David's young men, he came and told Abigail, David sent men from the desert to bless our master. In other words, they greeted him, and he rejected them. He pushed them away. And now he tells Abigail something that maybe she didn't know. These men were very good to us. And is this fellow talking as a shepherd? He says, these men were very good to us. We were not embarrassed. We didn't lose one sheep. As long as you're with them in the field, they protected us. They were like a wall around us. Both at night and during the day. As long as you're with them, we were shepherding the flock, and we were successful in that, and nothing was taken. You should know what to do. He doesn't tell her, but you should know what to do. Because basically your husband's finished. And this phrase is used exactly the same way that was used in Perek Chaf when describing Shaul's attitude towards David. That is what David's attitude towards Naval is going to be. I'm finished with you. There's no more negotiation. And the kid says to Avigail something she evidently knows, "V'hu ben Belial midaberi lav." He's too much of a lowlife, you can't talk to him. In other words, you can't convince Naval to run after David and to give him a gift and apologize. That's not going to happen. So you better know what to do. In the meantime, there's a particular survival component here, because the fellow is telling Avigail that David is going to come and massacre, and he and Avigail and all the other fellows, who perhaps would not have responded the same way, are right there in the path of the oncoming onslaught of the future king, or perhaps the present king. So what does she do? She took 200 loaves of bread, and 2 flasks of wine, and 5 prepared sheep, and 5 se'ah of toasted corn. Me'at simukim here doesn't mean 100 raisins, it means 100 raisin cakes. Umatayim dvalim, and 200 figs, that means fig cakes again. Matasim al chamurim. So she loaded all this stuff up on the donkeys. She told the boys to walk in front of her and lead the donkeys. I'm following you. And she's smart enough that she did not tell Naval what she was doing. Now remember, we've got David coming from one hill, or one area, coming on his way to ascend to Carmel to attack Naval. And meantime, Avigail is coming down that same mountain on the same road to come and meet David and bring him the gift that her husband did not give him. As she was on the donkey coming down in the enclosed part of the mountain, meaning she's coming around a curve where you couldn't see, and in the meantime, David is coming from the other side, and they bump into each other. David's on his way up to massacre. She's on her way to feed, and they meet each other. David Amar. Now, Amar here is the past perfect. It means David had said. This is now going back to what David said in his camp. Achla sheker shamarti kol asher lazem b'minbar. I watched everything this guy had for nothing. And now you see again an evocation to the rule of the desert, that if you watch somebody's flock, even if you did it voluntarily, you have a right to the proceeds. He's saying, I watched him for nothing. Not one of his sheep was taken. And he's paid me back with evil in place of good. Something that reminds us of the last chapter, the what Shaul admitted he had done. Now we see Naval is doing the same. There's that oath form again. Im ashir mikol ashelo ad haboker, or ad or haboker in other manuscripts, mashtin bekir. Now remember, the form of an oath in Tanakh, we talked about this much earlier, the form of an oath in Tanakh is not the way that it appears in Masachet Shavuot, where you take an oath that I will do this, or that I won't do that, or that I didn't do this, or I did do that. But rather, the form of an oath in Tanakh is, I take an oath that if, and you say the opposite of the thing. You take an oath if I will leave anybody alive, which is a way of taking a note that I will not leave anybody alive. I will not leave anybody whose mashtin bekir is a euphemism, is not a euphemism, it's an idiom for men. It's saying anybody who urinates by the wall. It's a very derogatory way of saying men. I'm not going to leave anybody by morning. In other words, I'm going to wipe out the whole camp by morning. And remember, they're all in the middle of a party. They're singing, they're drinking, they're celebrating. They're going to be very vulnerable. David, and so now we come back to present time. Abigail sees David. She got off the donkey. She fell at David's feet, in front of David, on her face. She knelt down. She prostrated herself on the ground. In other words, she behaved to David like he was a king. She fell at his feet and she said, "Bi ani adoni ha'avon." Remember that phrase, "Bi ani adoni ha'avon," literally means, "The sin is in me." And that is the full form of a phrase that we see many times in Tanakh, Bi Adoni. Please, my master. But the real form is Bi Ani Adoni Ha'avon. The sin is in me, which is a way of saying, pardon me. It's the proper protocol for speaking to someone who is royal or is higher in rank. And she says, please let me speak, listen to my words. This reminds us, of course, at the very beginning of our Sefer of Chana, speaking to Eli. Same wording, Al Naya Sem Adoni Ad Libo El Ha'ish HaBli Al Hazeh Al Naval. Don't pay any attention to that disgusting guy Naval. In other words, she's saying to David what he just said to Shaul, which is, David said to Shaul, I'm not worth it. Why are you coming after me? I'm a nothing. That's what Abigail says back to David. Why are you going after Naval? He's a nothing. There's nothing worth paying any attention to. Kichishmo Kenu. She said his name, it defines who he is. Naval Shmo Unavalaimo. His name is Naval, and he is disgusting. Vani Alatcha, and I, your maidservant, Loraiti Nare Adunia Sheshalachta. I didn't see your messengers. Right away, we have now two arguments. Argument one is, Naval's not worth it. Argument two is, you're going to slaughter me? I didn't know about it. I'm innocent. And now we're not done. Again, just like David presented Shaul with three arguments in the last parak, why Shaul should leave him alone, that it's an evil act that he would do. David has done nothing wrong with him and to him, and David's not worth it. She now echoes that and says to David, Naval's not worth it. Why are you going after him? Plus, there's innocent people here who didn't know. And now third watch. V'ata Adoni, chai Adonai v'chein afshecha. She takes an oath by God, and by God who kept you from coming into blood, meaning spilling innocent blood, by sending me here. She says all of your enemies should end up being like Naval, which what she essentially says is, Naval, God's going to take care of Naval, and all your enemies should be like that, and you should never have to lift a hand to any of them to hurt them. In the meantime, I'm blessing God who has stopped you from that by sending me, as it were. And by the way, I brought this bracha, this gift to you. And give it to the boys who were walking with you. Please bear my sin. God is going to make for you a bayit neman. It's the first time we hear that phrase. A trustworthy house. You are fighting the wars of God. After all, David here is fighting for Ki'ilah. David is fighting for the people of Yehuda while Shaul is not fighting. And there's going to be no evil with you. Now this is a pitch for David to stay away from Naval. First of all, he's not worth it. Second of all, there's innocent people. But third of all, the more developed argument is as follows. A man got up to chase you, Shaul. They kill you. And your soul will be bound up in the bounds of life with God. What she means here in Pshat is, this man is coming to chase you, and you're going to stay alive. And God will take the person who is your enemy, and will put him in the slingshot, whatever that may mean. But in the meantime, what Abigail is saying to David is very evocative for David from his own experience, and that the enemy who you're seeking out will not be successful. You're going to live. He's going to die. The image of the slingshot, of course, has tremendous evocation for David, going back to the story with the giant. And then she says as follows. Vayomer David Vayaki Asadunai Laduni Kahola Shadibera Tatavala Khabitzifhala Nagid al Israel. And when God does everything for you that He's spoken, all of this good stuff, and makes you the leader, which means Abigail is recognizing that David is not yet officially the leader, but she's treating him like one. She's bowing before him, speaking to him in the proper way. And when all of this happens, Veloti Azot Lachalafuka Ulmikholev Laduni, Lishport Dam Chinam. This should not be an obstacle. This should not be the story of you spilling innocent blood. In other words, you're going to put a skeleton in your closet if you go attack Naval now. Because when you become the leader, people are going to start talking about this. To be saved. Meantime, God will do good for you. don't do this thing. It's going to be a terrible thing that will become part of your ugly past if when you become king. Not if, but when you become king. Rather, you should be saved. God has done good for you, and please remember me also. Now, what's Tavi's reaction? Effectively, she has given three arguments. Argument one, again, that Naval's not worth it. Argument two, they're innocent people here. But argument three is, this is not something you should be doing. Which evokes, of course, David's statement, Mirshaim Yetzer Rasha. She is mirroring what David said to Shaul as his arguments for Shaul leaving him alone. And David, in exactly the same way, is going to leave Naval alone. And just as Hashem will deal with Shaul, as David says, and will say again the next parak, similarly, Hashem will take care of Naval. And let's see that happen. He blesses God who sent her. Your thinking, your wisdom, and you yourself are blessed. You have kept me from engaging in blood. In other words, from spilling innocent blood. And saved my hand from me, as it were. Nonetheless, Chai Adonai Elohei Yisrael, Asher mena'ani mi'ara otach. He's taking an oath by God who has kept him from hurting her. Ki lulei mi heart, v'tavot likrati, if you had not, I'm taking an oath as to what I was prepared to do. If you had not hurried up and met me, ki im notar le'naval ad ora boker mashtin bekir. If Naval had even had one man standing up by morning. In other words, he's taking an oath that that's what he was going to do, and so you should realize how great it was that you came. And so now what happened? V'ikach tavid niyadai tashrei v'yalo, v'lamar alila shalom le'vetech, and so David took the gift from her. He said to her, go up to your house in peace. You see that I am listening to you, and I'm favoring you. And so what happened? Abigail came to Naval. In the meantime, he's having a party like a royal feast. He's quite happy. He's a little drunk. And he's very drunk. She said nothing to him, not a large thing, not a small thing. She said nothing about David or the gift, anything until the morning. What happened? Vahiva boker betzeitayayin minaval. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a beautiful piece on this in Al HaTshuva about how every party of Naval has the next morning when Abigail talks to him. The next morning she came to him and said, betzeitayayin Naval, after he was no longer drunk, she told him these things, vayamot libo bekirbo. Evidently, she told him, David was on his way to massacre you, and I stopped him, but you're a dead man. And Vayamot Libo Bekibo may imply some sort of a stroke. His heart died within him. V'huayala Avin, he was like stone. And 10 days later, God struck him and he died. It sounds like he was in a coma of sorts for 10 days, and then he expired. Vayishma David Kimet Naval, and David then heard that Naval had died. Now, the death of your enemies, without you having to raise a hand, is understood to be a sure sign of God's favor. Vayomer, Baruch Adonai Sheravet Riv Cherpati. Blessed is God who has fought the fight of my shame. And now this is the Midah Kenei Midah that David fought to protect from God's shame, back with the Philistine giant. Miyad Naval, Vet Avdo Chasach Mirah. In the meantime, he kept me from doing bad. Through Abigail's intervention. In the meantime, he paid him back. You see how terrible it is, this thing that Naval refused to allow the men of David to share in his celebration. You see how much an ethical and commercial blight and sin it was. And then, after this point, David sent messengers to go to Abigail and ask Abigail if she'd be his wife. They came to her at Carmel. So they came to Abigail and said, David has sent us to you to see if you will marry him. So what did she do? She got up and bowed on the ground. Watch how she lowers herself. Says, I am willing to be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of David. But of course, this is hyperbole. She got up and she went on the donkey, reminding us of Rivka, also a woman of great wisdom and of great kindness, who brought a great gift to the messenger, and then gets up on the donkey to go meet her husband. Chamesh narot ochot l'raglar, or five maidens came with her. Vatelach acharei malachei David, v'tidlo l'isha. She followed David's messengers, and she became his wife. Taking the wife of your enemy, which is something that goes back, perhaps, to a very early passage in Bereshit, is sure signs of ascension and of conquest, and now David has conquered Nabal, as it were, by Hashem killing him, and then by him taking Nabal's wife. You will find that throughout the narrative, Abigail is never called just Eshet David, she is called Eshet Nabal. As a reminder, as it were, that David has taken, has conquered his enemy, and has ascended by taking his wife. V'tachinoam lakach David mi'Israel. In the meantime, David has a second wife, whose name is Achinoam, and he takes her from Israel. The truth is, this information is hardly relevant now. She plays no role. Abigail played a big role, not Achinoam. And by the way, neither of them will play any sort of significant role from here on in. But the two of them were his wives. Why is this pasuk significant? Because if you remember back from Perek Yudalad, you remember that Shaul had one wife whose name was Achinoam. And so you notice that, first of all, clearly and decisively, David has defeated Nabal and taken his wife, and perhaps we're getting an illusion that David has already defeated Shaul because his wife is named Achinoam, as is the wife of Shaul. In the meantime, this next pasuk, which really belongs to Perak Chavav, but we'll just take a look at it pro forma, indicates that Shaul, Natan et Michal Bito Eshet David, so while David is in the desert and doing what he's doing as a defender of the Bnei Yehuda, in the meantime, his wife Michal, who was left at home, has now been given to another man, Palti ben Laish, who is from Galim, evidently on the other side of the river. And that, of course, raises huge questions about, well, she's married to David. David never divorced her. How is Palti living with her? Chazal say what they do. First he's called Palti, then later he's called Paltiel because he did a great thing, and he put a sword between them in the bed, and he never touched her. Although that doesn't seem to be borne out by the text in Shmuel Bet Paragimel, but we'll get to them at that point. Then in the next chapter, we will see a return to some of the places that David has been and some of the people with whom he interacted, which we will pick up in our next shiur when we study Perek Chafav. Everybody should have a wonderful day.